So Cushing's disease and Addison's disease are adrenal cortex problems, rare. One's too much and one's too little. Okay. Diagnosis of how they look for it. Things that they would expect to find. Okay, pituitary gland. We're going to look at some vocabulary definitions and briefly look at pituitary function and a few irregularities with those functions. These are relatively rare. They are also very complicated, and they take an endocrinologist very careful, an endocrinologist to do a very careful and very specialized exam and very specialized testing to diagnose and to treat. The secretion of each of the major hormones from the anterior lobe of the pituitary gland is controlled by the releasing factors coming from the hypothalamus, right. And these releasing factors reach the anterior pituitary gland by way of the bloodstream in a special circulation that's called the pituitary portal blood system. Remember, they have a stalk-like connecting them too. The anterior pituitary hormones enter the general circulation and are transported to their target organs. They have as their main function the release of hormones from other endocrine glands. And you know that because I've been saying that throughout this whole thing. Hypothalamus, releasing thing to the pituitary. Now I'm talking about the anterior pituitary. It gets the message and then it sends a hormone down to the specific target gland, and that gland then does its thing. Nothing is simple in this system. It's all this kind of way. It's because the levels have to be in such finely tuned, narrow parameters for everything to be right. Okay, let me see here. The first one, FSH, is a hormone from the anterior pituitary. Follicular stimulating hormone. The easiest way to think of that is in the female. In the ovaries, there are follicles that surround the ova. And fetal development of a female child, those things are put into place. And a female baby, when she's born, probably has around 2 million or so undeveloped eggs in there. And that's her bank account, okay? That's what she's got. That's it. As she grows and she moves into time when menstrual periods start and goes through that, what's that time called? What's the word for that?
Puberty.
Okay, puberty. Biological awakening of all this part of the time when mothers and parents are going, all right? One of the things that's happening is the follicular stimulating hormone is saying, come alive, it's time to wake up. Now, in the time from when she was an infant to when she's about, and now they're starting getting their periods, 10, 11, 12, things like that, some of those eggs have just winked out. It's kind of gone by the wayside. And now she starts this whole cycle, and each follicle or one, usually a couple of them will get this hormone, but one of them will win and start growing and developing and move to the edge of the ovary and pop out and ovulation and all that goes with that marvelous process. And by the way, males also have follicular stimulating hormone. They don't have ovaries and they don't have ova, but they have sperm and they have other things. So it acts in a slightly different way there, and they do have that. And the luteinizing hormones, the same thing. It happens to do to say it's time now for this one follicle that is most developed to actually move to the edge of the ovary and pop through and be available. So it's a marvelously complicated process, and throughout a woman's lifetime of menstruating years, she probably has approximately 400 or so menstrual cycles, and so uses some of those ova that are there. Remember, she started out with a couple million, I said. And not all of them ever develop. Some of them are just there but never develop. As they get older, as all of you have read and seen TV shows and stuff, as eggs get older, they seem to be more prone to having little flaws or defects or genetic mutations and things. So that's why the risk factor with older pregnancies is a reality. I have a good friend whose daughter is now unexpectedly pregnant with her third child. They were not planning this. She lives in another part of the country, so I can talk about this. And in fact, they had definitely decided they had two children, and that was fine. That's what they could do with, and he had vasectomy, and she got pregnant. And I said, when she told me this, I said, didn't they know about using protection for 8 weeks afterwards? Because those little sperm, you know, they're vicious little things, and they can hang around. And she said, well, you know, who's going to explain that? Anyway, didn't happen, and now she's pregnant, and this young woman is 40. And they've had some preliminary testing done and so forth, and there are some suspicious things in there. And then it's complicated by the fact that the father in this case is he would not win the Man of the Year award. Let's put it that way. Okay? And he has said in no uncertain terms, I am not up for a third child. And then when they got this indication that it was maybe problematic and they're looking at Downs and more testing to be done, and he said, there is no way I'm going to deal with this. And if that's what it is, I'm out of here. He's made this pretty clear. And maybe she should say, well, good riddance, you know. But there's a whole, you know, nothing is ever simple. Nothing is ever simple. And so here's this woman who's looking at this and waiting. She's in that interim period. She's had an amnio, and she's waiting for more results to come back. And it's like, so these are older eggs and things that can happen. Oh, I know it. I know it. It's a chancy kind of thing. Prolactin is the next one that has a specific action to stimulate the breast to make milk after birth has happened. And it's very interesting the way that kicks in after the placenta separates from the inside of the uterus and how everything is like activated, like the message is there. Growth hormone, a thyroid stimulating hormone, and then, which I've talked about earlier on, but growth hormone has widespread effects on many tissues. A growth hormone is also referred to as somatotropin. You may see it called that. They tend to put both words together, but not always. So somatotropin is also growth hormone. It's a protein-type hormone that increases protein synthesis or the making of protein in many tissues. It causes things to grow. That's why it's called a growth hormone. The actions of somatotropin or growth hormone are essential for normal growth. Other hormones, of course, such as thyroid and insulin, are important as well and required as well. Posterior pituitary lobe hormones. Here you see vasopressin. It has another name, and you came across this name last semester, antidiuretic hormone, or ADH. And ADH, or vasopressin is its older name, is stimulated by an increase in osmolality of the blood or by a decrease in blood pressure. And then oxytocin, another posterior pituitary lobe hormone. And the primary functions of oxytocin are to facilitate milk letdown or milk ejection during lactation and to increase the force of uterine contractions during labor and delivery. Oxytocin secretion is stimulated during pregnancy and at the time of childbirth, so it's a very timely hormone. Abnormal pituitary function, not unfamiliar, either too much or too little, right, of any of the hormones produced or released by this gland. The anterior pituitary and posterior pituitary, even though they're housed together in the pituitary gland, they can be very separate, so they can act very independently. So you might have both things going on or either one. Since the anterior lobe of the pituitary has many specialized cells that are involved in the production of the seven different hormones that we just took a look at, all of which are controlled by hypothalamic releasing factors. And the anterior lobe and the posterior lobe can independently have some malfunction. The range of problems that can occur with malpituitary hormone function is vast. And I'm just going to include a few vocabulary terms and direct you to the text to do a little bit of looking and reading, not because it's primarily important, because these are even more rare, but because it's kind of interesting, okay? And it's helpful to have the pictures there. Let's look at this one because one posterior pituitary disorder, because it has a name called diabetes insipidus. And what it is a deficient or not enough production of the vasopressin, which is ADH, right? You might want to add that there. So diabetes insipidus is a disorder due to a deficiency of ADH, or vasopressin. You can see what happens here. There are large volumes of very dilute urine that are excreted. It's characterized also, in addition to this, huge thirst, huge, huge thirst, polydipsia. So polydipsia in large volumes of very dilute urine. It may be secondary to trauma, to head trauma, brain tumor, surgical ablation or irradiation of the pituitary gland. Another cause of diabetes insipidus is failure of the renal tubules to respond to the ADH. Without the action of vasopressin or ADH on the distal nephron of the kidney, an enormous daily output of very dilute water-like urine with a low specific gravity of 1.001 to 1.005 occurs, very dilute. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So diabetes insipidus is characteristic of a couple of things. I I don't know that it would fit the definition of a chronic illness. But because you can't have these symptoms and not get into trouble pretty quickly. So that would be more of an acute kind of thing. So I'm not sure that it really fits that classification. The inability to increase the specific gravity to where it should be and the osmolality of the urine is characteristic of diabetes insipidus. Synthetic vasopressin is administered, that is, the treatment for it, and it's administered intranasally. It's a spray. 2 to 4 administrations daily appear to correct the problem and control the symptoms. There is also an intramuscular form of ADH when the intranasal route is not possible, and sometimes that's not for one reason or another. If that's the way it has to go, it's usually given at night so that the maximum results are obtained during sleep. Abdominal, and part of the reason also is there a lot of abdominal cramping as a side effect of this medication, given it this way. And it's very irritating to tissues, so they have to rotate sites and stuff. This person is advised to wear a medic alert bracelet and carry his medicine with him. Okay, so here we have too much. Excessive ADH secretion. And here we have here's another acronym, Syndrome of Inappropriate Antidiuretic Hormone Secretion, SIADH. And you will see this occasionally. You will see this acronym because this is a common complication of certain kinds of cancers, particularly lung cancers. The people with this disorder cannot excrete a dilute urine. They retain fluids. And they develop a sodium deficiency. This disorder is often of a non-endocrine origin. The syndrome may occur when malignant lung cells synthesize and release their own ADH, and do not ask me how that happens. They just know that this is a, not common, but it is a very possible complication of lung cell carcinoma, particularly certain kinds of carcinomas. Yeah. This is with bronchogenic carcinoma. It has also occurred with other lung problems, severe pneumonia, a pneumothorax, and other disorders of the lungs, in addition to malignant tumors that affect other organs. So this is kind of an oddball thing, don't you think? There's something there in the lung tissue that when it's problematic from another reason, can somehow put this out. This syndrome is generally managed by eliminating the underlying cause if possible and by restricting the person's fluid intake. Because retained water is slowly excreted through the kidneys, the extracellular fluid volume contracts and the serum sodium concentration gradually increases toward normal. Diuretics may be used along with fluid restriction if severe hyponatremia is present. Doesn't this sound like a makeup for dehydration? It's like, whoa, trying to get rid of all this fluid. So, close monitoring, very close monitoring of intake and output, daily weight, urine and blood chemistries, and neurologic status is indicated for the patient at risk for SIADH. You can read about anterior pituitary gland dysfunctions. There's a nice table of them on your FIPS book on page 875. And there are some pictures in there of a woman throughout her life with acromegaly, the growth hormone hypersecretion. And these are kind of weird and unusual things, and certainly very devastating for the person who's living with this. Not common kinds of things. But that's where we're going to stop this. And Professor Whitman's group, please go back to her room, and you guys...